This miscellaneous topic discusses retirement accounts, regular accounts, annuities, because you gotta put your money somewhere, right? And we discussed this quite a bit in the Business 121 class, the Financial Planning and Money Management class. And our textbook has you discussing these in the beginning of the semester, where it talks about opening up accounts and the like. But I think that's putting the cart before the horse. It makes sense for us now that we understand the investments to decide where we're going to put the investments. There's, at times, as we'll see, some confusion between the investments and the account that the investments are placed into. So let's get started on slide number 2. This graphic, I apologize if it's not that great, but this graphic is trying to show you the difference between a regular taxable account, and you'll hear people say regular account, taxable account, regular taxable account, and what the IRS refers to as tax qualified accounts. Now, we just have retirement accounts there, but there are other tax qualified accounts, such as educational savings accounts and medical savings accounts, but we're just going to discuss retirement accounts for now. The same types of issues apply to the other tax qualified accounts. So let's take a look here. This is meant to look like a bucket, a bolsa, a bin, a container. And the difference between the two is how they are registered. It's called the registration, what the name on the account is. A regular account will have your name on it. You are in control of the account. A retirement account, or an educational savings account, or a medical savings account, will say something a little different. It'll say custodial account for the benefit of, and then it'll have your name. And that's important, because if you don't register the account correctly, the IRS will say, oh, that's a regular account. You have to pay taxes on it every year. And when you do create a tax-qualified account, you actually don't have the money. I mean, it's your money. Don't worry. No one's going to take it. But it's held by a trustee. It's held by a custodian for your benefit. And that's the IRS rules. I mean, that's what it has to be. So let's try to take a look at the differences in between these. The taxable account has no limit on contributions. If you have $1 million, boom, you can put it into a taxable account. Retirement accounts and other types of tax-qualified accounts have strict limits on the contributions, and we'll discuss some of those as we go along. You can't put $1 million into your Roth IRA. The IRS will send you a friendly letter saying, no, this isn't how it works, and usually the company that you do business with has rules built into their computer systems that will kick it out. They'll say, no, you can't do this. But there's a way you can get around it if you tried hard. The next limitation is the investment types. In a regular taxable account, there is no limit on what you can put into the account. If you want to do futures and options and shorting and margining, all those really scary, risky things, you can. It's a taxable account. Whereas the Congress, in their infinite wisdom, remember their representation of us, decided that because these accounts are meant for retirement or education or medical savings, we want to put limits on the investment types. Folks, stocks are risky enough, right? As we've seen, some stocks can make us very happy, others can make us very sad. And of course, the mutual funds that invest in the stocks can do the same thing. And then we have bonds and cash, which are certainly much less riskier than shorting or futures. Now, you notice you don't see real estate here in a retirement account. The truth is, folks, there are ways to get real estate into a retirement account, but it's not easy, and it's potentially very dangerous. So I left it out. If you are so inclined, you need to do some serious research, and I wish you a lot of luck. Now, the last and probably the most important distinction is if you have a taxable account, every year the IRS is going to expect you to pay taxes. If you made rent, I mean if you earned rent, or capital gains, or interest, or dividends, the IRS is going to say, great, you know, you've earned some money, you have to pay taxes. With a retirement account, a tax-qualified account, the IRS either says, no problem, that money is deferred until you retire, until you take the money out, or in some cases, it is totally tax-free. Assuming you do everything you're supposed to do, then you don't have to pay any taxes. Very cool. So now let's now take a look at slide number 3 and start to break down the different types of tax-qualified accounts. Now again, we're going to just discuss retirement accounts, but if you are thinking about an educational account for your kids or grandkids or yourself, or a medical savings account, these same kind of conditions are going to apply. There are basically two types of retirement accounts: pre-tax, or sometimes called before-tax, and post-tax, or sometimes called after-tax. By far the bigger group, are the pre-tax contributions, and they've been around for a long time. 401ks, 403bs, traditional IRA, SEP IRA, simple IRA, KEO. It's not really called a KEO anymore, but people still call it a KEO. I think it's called HR 10 or some strange name. How do these work? You get a tax break now. You get to deduct contributions from your income taxes now, and you pay taxes in retirement. And as the account grows, you grow the account tax deferred. You don't have to pay taxes every year. It's very, very cool. The other type, which is much newer, is the post-tax contribution. Roth IRAs were the first ones. It says for almost everyone, but the truth is everybody can have a Roth IRA now. The rules are very strange, as we'll see, but everybody can have a Roth IRA. Then there's the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b. Now, we put those in quotes because the IRS doesn't call them a Roth 401k, Roth 403b. They just call it a 401k or a 403b with post-tax contributions. And these don't give you a tax break now. They give you a huge tax break later. Tax-free. Now, the IRS doesn't like that term, tax-free. They like tax-exempt, but I like tax-free. Slide number 4. The individual retirement arrangement? What are you talking about? I thought it stood for individual retirement account. Yeah, well, everybody else calls it individual retirement account, but the legal term and what the IRS uses is individual retirement arrangement. It is the most popular personal retirement plan. It's now referred to as the traditional IRA. Why? Because of the Roth IRA, just to differentiate so people know you're talking about a traditional IRA and the other one's called the Roth IRA. Anyone with earned income, anyone, doesn't matter how much money you make what income bracket you are, you can contribute to a traditional IRA. Now, here's where the confusion sets in. Normally, those contributions are tax deductible. They're pre-tax. But if you have a retirement plan at your employment and you make over a certain amount, then you can still contribute. There's some confusion here. People think you can't contribute. You can. You can still contribute to the traditional IRA, but you won't be able to deduct it from your taxes that year that you contribute. It'll still grow tax deferred. Now here's the catch. You have to remember how much you put in after tax. Okay? Because if you don't, if you forget that you put it in after tax, when you go to take it out, the IRS will just assume that it was all taxable, and you'll wind up paying income taxes twice. Not a good deal, right? So you have to remember that. And for some people, it can become a bit of an accounting nightmare, which is why I'm not personally a big fan of it, of putting in after-tax contributions. But hey, everybody's different. The contribution limits are increasing with inflation, and your investment grows tax-deferred. And you pay taxes on the money as you withdraw the money once you are retired. And this is normally after 59 years and a half. Now, there are ways you can retire earlier, but it's normally after 59 years and a half. If you make it to 70 and a half, congratulations, you must start taking the money out. There are mandatory withdrawals that begin at age 70 and a half. And the penalties for not doing it are severe. It is amazing. I do not understand why they have done this, why they have put this into the tax code, but it's there. And so you, if you have any grandparents or you're facing this situation or parents, you've got to make sure they understand that they have to start taking that money out. For example, if you were supposed to take out, say, $2,000 out of your account and you didn't do it, there's a formula for how much you have to take out depending on how much you have and what your age is. They're called required minimum distributions. If you don't do that, the penalty is 50% of what you were supposed to take out. So that you were supposed to take out $2,000, they're going to penalize you $1,000. And you, what I've noticed, now this is just my personal experience. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a tax authority. I'm not an enrolled agent, as they're called, or a CPA. But I've noticed that they don't really enforce this strictly. I guess because they feel guilty, what you're doing to these senior citizens. But yeah, you've got to be careful. Slide number 5. And the IRA has many cousins and siblings and aunts and uncles. The 401k, very popular. The 403b, the 457, the 401a. What are these stupid numbers? Well, they refer to sections of the Internal Revenue Code that allow corporations or public non-profit institutions to set up these employer-sponsored retirement plans. Now, wouldn't it be nice if they had a better name for it than a 401k? So we go to the IRS and we say, don't you have a better name than 401k or 403b? And they say, yeah, we got a better name. We call them salary reduction agreements. Yep, that's what I want. I want my salary reduced. If it were me, I'd say, this is the best, fantastic, fun. Well, they're not perfect, but they are very, very cool. Because the burden of retirement is more and more being placed squarely on the shoulders of the employees. And the opportunity is there for you to have a personalized pension plan that is very good, better than anything the company's going to give you. But the opportunity is there for you to have zip, not a zilch, because if you don't contribute, or if you really don't invest prudently and just get hog wild and take your money out when the market crashes, put your money in when the market's doubled in value, as many people are wont to do, you won't have the best returns. Mm-hmm. So it's a double-edged sword. The SEP IRA, the Simple IRA, the Simple 401k, and SARSEP and KEO. Well, the SARSEP has been discontinued. But they're all basically the same things. They're small business self-employed plans. I'm sorry, they're plans for self-employed or small businesses, and they allow you to put money in pre-tax. Some of them are very generous. The SEP and the Simple have IRA and Simple 401k have some generous provisions. So does the KEO, the HR10. Now, the new kid on the block is the Roth IRA. Now, where does the name Roth come from? It came from the name of the senator who proposed it, William Roth. And that's why they called it the Roth IRA. And these allow you to put money in after tax, and then when you go to take it out, providing you've done everything you're supposed to do, it is tax-free. Very cool. Slide number 6. So let's take a look at an example. You contribute via your paycheck, $100, right? Well, the feds, depending on your tax bracket, are going to give you a subsidy. So let's say you're in the 25% tax bracket. They're going to give you $25. And if you're in the 25% tax bracket in California, you're in the 6 or the 8% bracket. So let's say $8. The California, state of California, is going to give you $8. And you get a total government subsidy of $33. Now, are they going to write you a check for $25 and $8? No. What they're going to do is they're going to take 25 fewer dollars out of your paycheck. They're going to lower the amount of money they take in taxes because this money is pre-tax. Makes sense? Very cool. So you see your take-home pay only reduced by $67. If you're in a higher tax bracket, it would be a more generous subsidy. If you're in a lower tax bracket, it would be a less generous subsidy. You see your take-home pay reduced by $67, or whatever the number is, depending on your tax bracket. But the whole $100 still goes into the account. Plus, we're not even taking into account the possibility that your employer may match some of your money. You put in $100, they put in $50. You put in $100, they put in $100. Some companies match dollar for dollar. That's free money. That's a 50% or 100% return on your investment. Who is going to give you that kind of return on your investment? Nobody except your employer. Now, why would your employer do it? Well, because 50 years ago, 60 years ago, what they did is instead of giving it to you directly, they would put it into a pension plan that they managed called a defined benefit plan. And then when you retired, depending on how many years you worked, what your age was, what your salary was, you would get a certain income for the rest of your life. And then a bad thing happened as it concerns the businesses. People started living a whole lot longer. So these traditional benefit plans started to go, it didn't turn out very well for them. And it's a horrible problem to have, right? The people are living longer. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to get this out of their purview and give it to you. They're trying to take it off of their shoulders and put it on your shoulders. And so that's why they're very happy to contribute $50 or $100 for every $100 you put in. Now, what's the problem? A lot of people aren't doing it. They're not taking advantage of these things. Bad. So, you get to put in $100 and only see $67 taken out of your paycheck. What's the catch? Slide number 7, right? There's always a catch. Well, folks, you pay income tax on any amounts withdrawn in retirement. But people in retirement are usually in a lower tax bracket. Now, if you're not in a lower tax bracket when you retire, congratulations. I hope all my students and my clients and myself are in that terrible situation where we're pulling out too much money out of our retirement accounts in our golden years. It's a champagne problem. Oh my goodness, there's too much champagne. What shall we ever do? And of course, if you withdraw the funds before retirement, right, you're going to get a little slap on the wrist. You have to pay the income tax. Well, that makes sense. You didn't pay it on the way in. Plus, you got to pay a 10% penalty. Yeah, so people get a rude awakening when they cash out their retirement plans. But there are some exceptions. If you first-time home purchase, higher education, medical disability, financial hardship, which my understanding is it's harder and harder to get the IRS to accept that, you still have to pay the income tax, but you don't have to pay the penalty. So this is money that you kiss it and send it on its way and come. I'll see you back in 20, 30, 40 years from now when you've grown well, depending on how well you've invested. Now, let's take a look at the post-tax, the Roth IRA, the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b. You contribute to a Roth IRA $100. What do the feds give you? Nothing. What does the state of California give you? Nothing. Your disposable income is reduced by $100. So why would you bother contributing to a Roth IRA? You're not getting any tax break now. And this is the question some people are going to ask you. Why do you contribute to a Roth IRA? Now, here's the answer, slide number 9. Because a Roth IRA is so cool, folks. Tax-free in retirement is a golden opportunity. No other investment choice comes close. Well, there's some scenarios that you can work out where it may make sense to take the tax break now, but no, you know, comparing like types of investments, the after-tax almost always comes out ahead. And I think what they're going to do is they're probably going to get rid of these things in 20, 30 years. They're probably going to say, uh-oh, the Congress is going to be looking at all this money in Roth IRAs and they can't touch it. And there are others who say, don't trust them. You know what they're going to do 20 years from now? They're going to say, oh, remember what we said about tax-free in retirement? That was just a little joke. You know, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see. Maybe they'll have a limit if you're taking out $200,000 or whatever. But others will say, take the tax break now. Don't wait, because you could die. So there's, you know, two schools of thought, but I like the Roth IRA. Another reason I like the Roth IRA, not only because of the tax-free in retirement, is that you can withdraw the contributions at any time with no penalty. Why? Because you've already paid taxes on the contributions, so that money is yours. So if you take the contributions out, not the earnings, take the contributions out, you don't pay any taxes, you don't pay any penalty. Now, if you take the earnings out, you're going to pay a 10% penalty along with the taxes. And I guess that's fair, right? And what this does is this makes the Roth IRA also an excellent intermediate-term investment account, a purchase of a house or other high-ticket item. And the cool thing about these currently, as the law states now, they are not used in your financial aid calculations, so they're great for college expenses. Unlike an educational account or a regular account where they do use those in the financial aid calculations. So I'm a big fan of the Roth IRA. When people tell me they want to set up an educational fund for their kids, I say, okay, have you started your Roth IRA yet? Well, no. Fund that first. If you can fund that to the maximum for you and your spouse, or just you, go ahead, do that first, and then you can start an educational savings account. There are lots of choices. Slide number 10. But here's where it starts to get bizarre, tricky, weird. A Roth IRA is not for everyone. Well, yes, it is. How's that work? Well, there are limitations on the Roth IRA's contributions. Now, this gets confused with traditional IRA. There's no limitation on the traditional IRA contributions. There's a limit on whether or not you can deduct it or not, but you can always put money into a traditional IRA. But the Roth IRA, only single taxpayers with an adjusted gross income of $112,000 or less and married couples with an adjusted gross income of $178,000 or less in 2013 can fully contribute to a Roth IRA. So in other words, what they're saying is if you make a high salary, you can't contribute to the Roth IRA. And if you don't qualify, congratulations. I don't feel so sorry for you. You're making a good salary. But here's where it gets very bizarre. You can still contribute to the Roth IRA anyway. Why? Because if you find you made over the limit, or you knew going into it you were going to make over the limit, you can recharacterize the contributions into a traditional IRA, which, remember, does not have the same limitations, before you file your taxes. And that's the verb the IRS uses, recharacterize. So you recharacterize the Roth IRA contributions into a traditional IRA, and then you turn around on the same day using the paperwork, the same day you turn in all the paperwork, you convert the traditional IRA back into a Roth.
Yeah, I know. Who voted for these bozos, right? Right?
Oh, yeah.
We did.
I can't believe that they haven't fixed this. I just can't believe this. But that's the IRS. That's the, not the IRS, it's the Internal Revenue Code. The IRS has to enforce it.
So vote for the Congress bozo, a person of your choice, and tell them, fix the damn darn tax code, please. Don't hold your breath.
Slide number 11. Here are the contribution limits for 2013. They go up with inflation, as we said. And currently, it's $5,500 for anybody under 50. And if you're 50 or over, you get to put $6,500 in. The contributions are limited to the lesser of your gross salary or the maximum yearly contribution. So in other words, if you only made a couple thousand dollars that year working part-time, that's all you can put in. You can't put whole $5,000 in, $5,500. If you make at least $500 in any year, you have until April 15th, tax day of the next year, to put the maximum amount into an IRA or a Roth IRA. And if you're married, your spouse is also eligible for contributions. Even if he or she doesn't work, you can put the contributions in on their behalf. As long as you're married, you have to be married. Slide number 12. Here are the contribution limits for the 401k, the 403b, the 457. They're very generous, folks. $17,500. Wow. And if you're 50 or over, $23,000. So, in other words, if you make $17,500 in year 2013, you could put the whole thing into a 401k. So, let's think. You're young, you're married, one of you makes enough money so the two of you can live off of, you could put the other person's salary into a 401k. You do that for 5-10 years, you would never have to put another dime away in a retirement account. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't, but that's the reality. And if you invest well, prudently, and the world doesn't end, yeah. Now, the other spouse might say, no, wait a minute. Don't worry. Because you're married, you have claim to your spouse's retirement account. I know it has just their name on it, but that's the law. Now, there's a loophole in the law. When I first found this out, I didn't believe it. I had to ask around to the IRS and other people because it seemed too good to be true. But there was a loophole in the 2001 tax law that allows people in the public sector to double contribute to their 401k and their 457. So they could do it twice. And I thought by now they would have gotten rid of the loophole, but it's still there. Pretty amazing. Slide number 13. Now here's something very cool, especially for you, you folks starting out on the lower end of the economic salary scale. You get a tax credit if you contribute to your retirement accounts, depending on your income. And they're not really that low, those incomes, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, $29,500 for a single, $59,000 for married filing jointly. So, example, you put in $600, $50 a month. You may wind up getting $300 back in a tax credit. So you really need to remember this when you do your taxes. Now, if you have somebody else do your taxes for you, make sure you tell them that you put money into a 401k or a Roth IRA. A good tax preparer will ask you. By the way, TurboTax, I haven't tried the others lately, but TurboTax handles this well. They'll say, hey, did you put money into a Roth? You say yes, and it says, cool, you're going to get a tax credit. So don't forget this, because a tax credit is a dollar-for-dollar reduction of your income taxes, something you want. Now, the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b, as we said, we put it in quotes because that's not what the IRS calls it, but, you know, that's what people call it. If your employer offers the option, and they don't have to,
you are able to place after-tax dollars into your 401k, your 403bs, just like the Roth. Now, the employer matches, if any, will continue to be pre-tax contributions. So there's that rub again. You have to keep track of how much money went into it pre-tax and how much money went into it post-tax, or the IRS is going to try to take all of it. It's going to try to tax all of it when you pull it out. And another thing about the Roth 401k 403b is that contributions are not able to be withdrawn without penalty or taxes until retirement. The regular Roth IRA, yeah, those contributions are yours. In the Roth 401k and the 403b, you can't get at them. There is a way you can borrow money from your 401k, 403b. It's not the safest. Sometimes it's a great idea, folks, buying a home or something like that. But if you lose your job, that loan becomes due immediately. It's a scary thought. This 401k, 403b is a great option for those who do not need the tax break now on the lower end of the economic salary scale. But I'm a big fan of the Roth IRA because of the fewer restrictions. However, if your employer matches those contributions, folks, then the Roth 401k 403b is a no-brainer. It's a good choice because that's a 50%, 100% return on your investment. Who cares if you have to keep track of the cost basis, as it's called, how much went in pre-tax, post-tax, just do it. And who cares if you can't get the money out? You can borrow from it if you need to. I'd take 100% return on my money any day. By the way, Southwestern College doesn't match our 403Bs. Slide number 15. Now, we really do need to visit, at least for one or two slides, annuities. I am not a big fan of annuities. I'll tell you right off the bat, the fees are very high. If you're an insurance agent, oh boy, would you love to sell annuities because the commissions are great. Annuities are life insurance products designed to provide a guaranteed income. Annuity options include income for a set number of years, for as long as you live, the life income option, very popular, or for as long as you or your spouse or whatever dependent you choose live, even if he or she outlives you. So in other words, what you're doing is you're buying a guaranteed stream of income. The amount you get is based on which of the above options you pick, how much you've contributed, how well your annuity investments have performed over time. And there are two main types, the fixed annuities, which mostly invest in bonds, and the variable annuities, which invest in mutual funds, which means they can invest in stocks and or bonds. What are the advantages and disadvantages? Well, one of the cool things about annuities is that there's no limit on contributions. You can fund them with retirement account dollars, or you can fund them with after-tax dollars. This is not true of the 401ks, the IRAs, and the like. The interest is earned tax deferred. You pay taxes on any pre-tax annuity contributions and all tax deferred earnings as you withdraw them in retirement. So you're going to have to do one of these things again where you have to keep track of after-tax and pre-tax. And as with other retirement plans, when you retire, you will likely be in a lower income tax bracket. What are the downsides? They have very high fees. Yeah, I just get so upset with these people because they just, well, what should I, you know, it's their decision. There are lots of different annuities, and some of them have some really wild features. They'll invest in the stock market, but you can't lose money. What's the catch? Well, the catch is when the stock market does really, really well, the amount of money you earn is capped. So you don't lose on the downside, but you don't gain much on the upside. And sometimes these things have done very well, but usually I wouldn't buy them. And if I wouldn't buy them for myself, I wouldn't sell them. So, on annuities. And of course, I angered quite a bit of life insurance companies and annuity salespeople out there, but come after me. See if I care. I'm one of you. And whenever I would get into a discussion with one of these people, I haven't done it lately, but I would say, okay, let me show you what I would recommend or what I would buy, and you show me what you will recommend. And if mine does better than yours, I'll buy, you buy mine. And if yours is better than mine, I'll buy yours. And they never take me up on it. So let's review. There are regular accounts where you pay taxes every year, and they're great, don't get me wrong, but it is a wonderful feature to be able to put money into a retirement account, either pre-tax, get a tax break now, tax break to pay taxes later, or the post-tax contributions where you don't get a tax break now, but it's tax-free in retirement. And then there are the annuities with their high fees and their huge surrender values, but you get tax deferred earnings. Cool? And if you're so inclined, you could go to the Business 121 sections, Chapter 11 and Chapter 14, where we discuss these because they're so important. They're just so important. Why? Because, as we said, the burden of retirement is being placed squarely on your shoulders. You have the opportunity to have a phenomenal retirement, and you have the opportunity to be looking at Social Security only, which is what a lot of baby boomers are doing, and realizing that what a bad deal that is. And we could spend a lot of time talking about that. When Social Security was created, it was never meant to be the sole source of retirement income. It was just meant to be one quarter or one third. Yeah. That's a whole other discussion. I hope this has been useful to you, and we'll see you in the next miscellaneous topic.